is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
That baby will go!
Lance Lynn with an absolute gem.
Big hooray! It is gone! It's a no-hitter! Carlos Rodon! What a performance!
Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Welcome in to White Sox Weekly. We are getting late in January, which means we are getting closer and closer to February, which is when White Sox pitchers and catchers and then the whole squad reports closer and closer to spring training we inch. Sox fans, 2023 ticket plans are available right now. We offer a variety of plans. When you lock in today, you'll get flexible payment plans, savings on single games, great seat locations, and more. For more information, visit whitesox.com/season tickets. Like the big voice guy said, I'm Connor McKnight. This is White Sox Weekly. More than anything, it's your show, 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. You want to talk a little White Sox? We are the place for you in the next hour or so. I know what you're up to. You're driving around, making your last runs for snacks, chips, dip for the upcoming couple of football games this afternoon and next week. I know you're thinking about the White Sox while you're driving around. How could you not? Give us a ring. We'll talk a little baseball. Charlie Bevins is our producer on the other side. Hi, Charles. Good to talk with
Hello,
you.
Hello, Connor.
Always,
good to talk to you as well.
Always a pleasure. Hey, right off the bat here, we have a lot to talk about. Here's kind of the thumbnail for the hour. Charlie grabbed some sound. That's what we call in the business, some sound from both Dylan Cease, who met with White Sox beat reporters earlier in the week, and Lucas Giolito was on the MLB Network detailing a couple of different things that were news for those of us who, aren't in on Lucas's training sessions. So, you know, most of us. We'll get to that in a little while. Want you to hear that kind of stuff. I know we played a little bit from Dylan last week, but there's some new stuff there, too. Think that will be interesting for you to hear. Also, we're going to talk about the bullpen. You know, last Saturday, more specifically, was our first time talking here on the show, having been updated on Liam Hendricks' cancer situation, the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Again, as a reminder, the White Sox will not update his status until, at the very least, opening day. However, after, you know, giving it some time to have Liam make his statements and teammates kind of issue some well wishes, of course, and others, we'll talk a little bit about the state of the White Sox bullpen as they seem ready to or set with a roster to open 2023, and talk about how Pedro Grifol, the new manager, may navigate some of those late inning opportunities, those saved chances, what might be good ideas, what might be kind of off the wall things. I want to know what you think, how the White Sox could navigate Liam Hendricks' absence here in the onset of 2023. More than anything, though, I was hipped just prior to the show about some big news for us here on the White Sox Radio Network. Our very own Len Casper is celebrating a birthday today. We love Len, and you can get in touch with Len all throughout the season using the hashtag AskLen. You get to ask questions of Len Casper during White Sox games and, you know, kind of talk with him as you go. Heck, we even had one White Sox fan who would listen all season long to our radio broadcasts get to do a voicemail question for Len on a game. I'm not saying we're definitely going to repeat that with some of the All-Star question askers for this coming season, but we're probably going to repeat that with some of the All-Star question askers for 2023. So if you want your voice on a White Sox radio broadcast, Charlie, it seems like the math of this is easy. You should just use the hashtag AskLen all throughout the year. Pop in and ask Len Casper questions, right? I mean, this is a simple thing to do.
Oh, absolutely. He's a great question answerer, if that is such a skill.
Of course he is. Of course he is. And as a broadcaster, I think you need to be one. Now, the reason I brought Charlie in here, too, is that I had him do a little extra last-minute homework right before the show started to take you behind the scenes frantically. I was like, Charlie, it's Len's birthday. Please pull some fun stuff that Len did. So, Charlie, what do we have for everyone?
We have both the Field of Dreams call and the no-hitter call.
Do you have a favorite? Because, I mean, Len Casper is he's a hell of a broadcaster. Marlins, Cubs, of course, we had some great moments. And it's the Cubs, but we're talking about Len's broadcast work. And here, in the last two seasons of White Sox baseball, there have been some doozies, and I think those are the top two, but I absolutely have a favorite, and I'll tell you, but I want Charlie to go first.
Yeah, how about let's start with the Field of Dreams call. That one is my personal favorite. Yeah. Just the pure joy in his voice when he says White Sox win.
Short lead by Sebi. The pitch is hit in the air. Deep to right. That ball is gone! White Sox win! The Field of Dreams!
Just an absolutely unhinged game, that's for sure. The long version, and I'm going to give Charlie some extra homework. The long version of that, because it's a lengthy, you know, it was beefy, the moment, right? This is my favorite Lynn Casper moment with the White Sox so far, because he and DJ worked together so well to put the button on the thing. The moment was huge. It was maybe the story of the summer in all of Major League Baseball. And I just thought, what a better way. How could there possibly be a better way for Len to kind of introduce himself to the White Sox audience and for us here at ESPN 1000 to kind of help the White Sox audience have a good time in the summer of 2021. That's by far my favorite call yet of Len's.
Yeah, and it's funny because that call is in our open for all our White Sox games.
Of course.
And it always gets me so pumped up before the game starts.
The moment, so Ryan McGuire, to take you behind the scenes again, listeners, to kind of our workings here at the network, we love to do it. Ryan McGuire, good friend, great guy, wonderful radio programmer, was our executive director of White Sox baseball that summer. Immediately after the game, Ryan was cutting that to throw into all of our promos, all the opens, everything. Like the moment the ball landed in right after Tim hit it, Ryan has already started cutting that thing up and adding it into all of the promos. And I'm sure Eric was doing the same thing. So that's kind of one of them. This one, though, I mean, the Rodon no-hitter happened earlier. I mean, it was a cold night in April against the Guardians, and it really could have been a perfect game. But I thought Len did this no-hit call about as good as anybody can.
Another 3-2. Ground ball to third. Moncada up with it. Throw to first. It's a no-hitter. Carlos Rodon has no-hit the Cleveland Indians. The 20th no-hitter in Sox history.
And I think I've told this story on air before. And if I haven't, here's something for you. I had never seen a no-hitter before in person. That was my first, Rodon's. I had been to a lot of baseball games. I've been lucky enough to cover the game for a long time. Not a really long time, but long enough to have been close to some of them. In fact, the closest I've gotten to seeing a no-hitter was at Wrigley Field. It was a White Sox-Cubs matchup, actually. And if you remember, Ted Lilly for the Cubs and Gavin Floyd for the White Sox both took no-hitters into the seventh. I think Lilly's went a little bit longer, if memory serves. Juan Pierre broke up one half, and I forget who broke up the other. But it was getting really close. I was working for another shop at the time, White Sox rights holder, and I was going to go down on field and grab Gavin and throw him onto the broadcast if he completed the no-hitter, that whole thing. That's as close as I had gotten to seeing a no-hitter live. So as Rodon was mowing down Guardians, Len, in between the sixth, after the top of the sixth, at Guaranteed Rate Field, Guardians go down 1-2-3, of course. Len goes, he's going to do it. He said it. He called right there, not on air. He said it to us, and I'm saying it now because I want you to know. He said it. He's going to do this. I didn't believe him at the time. I truly didn't. Just because I'd never seen something quite like it. And to be quite honest with you, because of how cold it was, I figured, and you know, Rodon's out there working with, you know, six buttons unbuttoned and no sleeves under the jersey and everything. I just, with it being that cold, I didn't think that a pitcher was going to be able to, you know, consistently manipulate the ball. Like, I mean, I know hitting is difficult in cold weather, same as pitching is, all that kind of stuff, but I just thought it would be much more difficult than it ended up being, or I guess that Rodon ended up proving it being. So those are some two fun ones. If you've got another favorite Lynn Casper moment, let us know. 312-332-3776. Happy birthday, Len. This whole, we're all better because you're around. All right, a couple of things I wanted to get to since we've gotten the Rodon call out of the way. Let's stick with pitching a little bit here and after the break. I want to talk some about how the White Sox may navigate the last couple of innings of games, at least in the outset of 2023. Obviously, without Liam Hendricks, one of the best relievers in the game, I believe he was seventh on MLB Network's top 10 relievers right now list, which, you know, it's not an end-all be-all list. We'll talk about one error they made concerning the White Sox a little bit later on in the show. But it's a, you know, it's a representative list of, you know, who's hot, right? And Liam having been American League reliever of the year in back-to-back seasons. And, you know, I mean, he's a guy you can count on for 35, 40 saves in a year. He will take the ball. The White Sox will have to change that kind of change the prescription at the end of the game, I think. Now, fortunately for the Sox, they are equipped with a number of guys who have the stuff and some experience in closing down games late. The first and most obvious guy that's probably going to get saves for Pedro Grifol and for Ethan Katz coming out of the bullpen will be Kendall Graveman. However, Graveman kind of struggled in back-to-back outings last year, and at one point, you know, fairly early on, was not tabbed to go back-to-back outings, day by day, back-to-back days. It just wasn't something that they were able or comfortable to do with the way he was kind of responding to some of those games. Now, that's not atypical for relievers, but it is certainly something way more difficult if that guy is your closer or a guy who has those concerns is your closer. Now, for that reason, and I think a lot of White Sox fans are probably screaming into their car speakers right now, Reynaldo Lopez's name, and I think you're right. In fact, Ethan Katz, White Sox pitching coach, was on an interview that we did with him a couple of weeks ago, maybe more like 2 months ago, something like that, and kind of mentioned Reynaldo's name as a guy who could close later on down the line that might have had that kind of thing. Reynaldo talked about it toward the end of the season. I could see myself as a closer and ever having a good go as a starting pitcher for the White Sox after having come over from the Washington Nationals in the Adam Eaton trade. Reynaldo, I mean, he had always had a very lively, very effective fastball, and he located it fairly well too. But the slider was a pitch that really needed to come around in order to make him the kind of wipeout, high strikeout sort of guy you like to see at the back end of the bullpen. And it did. That really became an effective, useful pitch for him. He had the eye surgery, you know, corrective eye surgery that seemingly helped a lot. You know, it was just if it's, you know, he's kind of mentioned it too, just with the confidence that he's got in being able to, you know, see the catcher's signs. And it's, you know, different obviously with PitchCon now, but it made a difference. Reynaldo has kind of talked about that some. I wouldn't be too surprised at all if your first option, parentheses, options for the White Sox in the first 2.5 months of 2023 are Kendall Graveman and Reynaldo Lopez as option 1B for Pedro Grifol and the White Sox. I think what that does for you is it allows Aaron Bummer and Jake Diekman, and maybe a mix of some other right-handers that can handle lefties well, to kind of be that matchup situation wherever it needs to happen, you know, seventh, eighth, something like that. It allows you to kind of rotate that eighth inning a little bit with Joe Kelly and Aaron Bummer. Maybe Jose Ruiz needs to take a step up and be able to pitch a little bit better than he has in pressure situations. Ruiz has been a steady guy. He's able to get you out of stuff and has the stuff that looks like it might have the capability of stepping up in class a little bit, or at least in pressure some. It would be big for the White Sox and for Ruiz, for that matter, to be able to make that next little step here. There's another couple, though, factors that I think could come into play early on for the White Sox in 2023 toward the back end of the bullpen, and we'll get to those when we come back. We're also going to hear from Dylan Cease and Lucas Giolito this afternoon. So stay with us. More White Sox Weekly to come right here on ESPN 1000.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. see the White Sox in 2023 and become a White Sox insider today for sweepstakes, special offers, Friday 5, pre-sales, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. Talking about the bullpen situation for the White Sox and how they'll have to work around the ninth inning, late innings. That'll be a really interesting kind of run of questions that White Sox beat reporters ask of Pedro Grifol and Ethan Katz once camp starts here. By the way, pitchers and catchers report February 15th, so just a couple of weeks from now. And the first full squad workout is the 20th, with the first game of spring training February 25th. And, of course, that you can hear right here on the ESPN 1000 White Sox Radio Network. Now, we've been talking about who gets the opportunities first, who's first crack. And I don't think it should surprise anyone, at least, you know, the speculation leans heavily toward Kendall Graven. But there are a couple of factors here that I kind of wanted to talk through and kind of think through with you as the White Sox look to kind of, bolster that situation, or at least reinforce it. Remember a couple of things. One is that while Pedro Grifol and the bulk of the hitting infrastructure, and for that matter, some of the defensive instruction, that's all new. That's all brand new and different with a new coaching staff. However, pitching infrastructure, whether that's Ethan Katz, the pitching coach, Kurt Hassler, an assistant pitching coach and bullpen coach, Rod Larson, who's kind of on the sabermetrics and high-speed camera side of things, that is all, you know, extant. That's been around since Katz has gotten here prior to the 2021 season. That's big, I think, because you've got a first-year manager in Pedro Grifol, and while the expectation is and the reputation is that this guy knows his way around the clubhouse and understands what it is to manage a ball club, even though he hasn't done this before. One of the biggest things, in my opinion, and I think in the opinions of many, that a manager matters for is making those bullpen decisions, being able to manage those pitching changes. And it's not just get this guy up, get him in for this hitter. Every manager, and Tony talked about this a lot in the two seasons he was there, you've got to think moves ahead, right? Multiple moves ahead. The tree branches, and as it does, the decision tree, you've got to be able to know what's coming from either branch, from any branch, really. What hitters are left on the other side. Now, the three-batter minimum does make it a little bit different nowadays, but the possibilities are still there. And you think in terms of pockets, right? You got two lefties out of the next three coming up in the sixth inning. So maybe I can use, you know, that kind of place. That's sort of strategy is what you're looking to do. That's difficult for most managers. It is even more difficult for first-time managers. That's why I'm really encouraged. By the way, Pedro has talked over and over about the communication that is absolutely necessary in maintaining and improving and keeping it absolutely perfect between himself, his pitching infrastructure, his individual pitchers, all that kind of thing is absolutely crucial. But having a veteran, you know, kind of staff in Katz and Hassler and is going to be really important, I think, for him to lean on. And in that sense, I think the White Sox did a really good job of hiring, you know, kind of one side. If you think about it as kind of an offensive and defensive coordinator kind of thing, I guess I've got, you know, football on the mind because we've got some fun games coming up a little bit later. It's not that simple in baseball. There's a little bit more a little less crossover, but still a lot of interdependence between the two sides. You've got a structure that can kind of work on its own on the pitching side of things in that bullpen. One other thing, though, that I think, and this is where that dependence kind of resurfaces, one other thing that I think can make the White Sox save situations much easier for Kendall Graveman, for Aaron Bummer, should he get some, for Joe Kelly, for Reynaldo Lopez, for anybody who's out there trying to lock down outs 25, 26, and 27, is the White Sox offense giving the team bigger leads to protect in 2023. And I know you're going, oh, well, yeah, of course. Win more games, buy more runs. Isn't that simple? But it is, but I think it's worth kind of hammering home here. Liam is one of the best players on the White Sox. You know, it's his position means he's only pitching 40 to 50, maybe 55 times a year, and that's just kind of the nature of bullpens. However, in terms of the best there is at what he does, Liam's on that list, and other White Sox are looking to crack into that list or back into that list, as it were. We'll talk about some of those MLB top 10s right now a little bit later on in the show. So when you're without your best, you need everybody else to kind of rise up and get things done. Having a two-run lead is easier to protect than a one-run lead. Having a three-run lead is better than a two-run lead. And not having a save opportunity by virtue of having a five-run lead is probably the easiest way to go out and win ball games. And I think, you know, over and again, we come back to the offense, whether that's being on base, hitting more home runs, not necessarily hitting for average because the White Sox did that well in 2022, but without Jose Abreu, you've got some average to make up. Being healthy always factors into the discussion when you're talking about 162 games of baseball, and the White Sox over the last couple of years have struggled to stay on the field when it comes down to, you know, some of their most important players, especially. So all those things matter, and I think all those things help improve a save situation, a ninth inning situation, as it were, for the White Sox in this coming season. One more, though, is defensively. Being cleaner defensively is big, absolutely huge. And the White Sox on defense did not achieve what they needed to last year. It's part of the reason they were, probably not the biggest reason, but certainly part of the reason they were mired at 81 and 81 for the year. I think signing Andrew Benintendi, and I've said this, I think, since I started this job for the second time a couple of years ago, corner outfield defense to me is big in this game right now with the propensity of fly balls. And maybe it's changing a little bit here, but with the idea that hitters are looking to launch, get the ball up in the air, do damage with extra bases, that means that anything that's not over the wall needs to get caught by one of those three outfielders. So outfield defense play is very, very big. Now, the shift not being in baseball, moving into the infield, the shift being illegal in 23, starting in 2023, is, I think, going to change quite a bit of how we regard our infielders anymore. I mean, no longer, and I know a lot of people use Mike Moustakas, having played second base for a couple of different teams, the Reds, the Brewers. Kansas City play him at second base just a little bit late in that. I don't think they did. Either way, though, that's a big-bodied dude. That's a thick fella with a couple of different Cs playing second base. And when you're shifting, you can get away with that. When you're not, when you can't, you need a little bit more live, a little bit more active second baseman. The White Sox have yet to name a starting second baseman, and obviously that defense on the left side is going to matter a lot more, which is why Tim Anderson having a good defensive year and Yoan Moncada doing the same is important. But you know, being able to man all those positions is a pretty big thing. And in fact, a little bit later on in the show, when we talk about a big trade in the AL Central, we'll talk a little bit about the defensive spectrum and kind of how guys figure to matter. One more note, reliever of note that I want to mention here, who I don't think will necessarily get save opportunities, or at least, you know, probably won't be thought of as a top guy to go get him. It's Jimmy Lambert. And he's got options left, one of them to be specific. And a year and, you know, a change, a year and a quarter of service time so far, Lambert absolutely broke out in 2022. And yeah, you know, he and I talked a little bit, I think, on White Sox Weekly late in the season, and it was a long year. And he did flag a little bit in terms of, I guess, in-game stamina or inter-game stamina. But that's to be expected for a guy making a change from starter to reliever, not really having done that job before. I think all things considered, Jimmy did really well. He's also 28 years old, so like prime to kind of solidify those results. I know that the White Sox, and you should know too, they added Nick Avila, a right-hander, a 25-year-old, in the Rule 5 draft from the Giants back in December. And without going too deep into Avila's pitch mix or kind of how he figures, roster-wise, the White Sox have to keep him on that active roster or risk releasing him back to the Giants. That's the nature of the Rule 5 draft, which means that the guys that can move around, the guys that do have options in this bullpen, are only two, Jimmy Lambert and Aaron Bummer. You don't figure Aaron Bummer to get sent back down to AAA for any reason other than rehab work, should he get injured, and hopefully that's not the case. But that means that Lambert might be a guy that has to shift up and down. Ruiz is out of options, and the rest, Diekman, Lopez, Kelly, Graveman, I mean, these guys are veterans who have been there for a long time, so there isn't the kind of flexibility in this White Sox bullpen from an option standpoint as other years have had. A couple of things I thought were worth noting, and then I guess one more. You know, Garrett Crochet figures to be back from Tommy John at some point in this coming season. At least that would be the optimistic timeline. I mean, Tommy John's can last for a while. It's not a, you know, it's a much better rehab timetable than it used to be. It is not easy. And I feel like I say this every offseason when a Tommy John conversation comes up, like though the results are much better and the success rate is much, much higher, please keep in mind that the rehab for these guys in Tommy John surgeries coming back, it is absolutely brutal. Mentally, it can be so, so taxing, to say nothing of the fact that you're rehabbing away from your teammates and you just don't, in most cases, and you don't have the kind of, you know, connective tissue with your friends. The breaking of the scar tissue, the up and down nature of it, the setbacks that will invariably occur during your rehab from Tommy John surgery. I think sometimes as baseball fans, we see these pitchers come back. Ah, it's Tommy John. He's fine. Come back in 12 months. He'll come back in 8 months if he pushes it really hard. It's fine. He'll be good. Maybe. Yeah, that could be the case. And you certainly hope so for Garrett Crochet. But do keep in mind that whenever Garrett comes back on the mound, he has been through one hell of a rehab process and deserves a good round of applause when he gets back onto that mound at Guaranteed Rate Field or wherever he makes his 2023 Major League debut. We've got some sound from Dylan Cease that we want to play, some sound from Lucas Giolito as well, and I want to talk about the big trade in the Central, the Twins picking up more pitching and getting rid of one of the league's best contact hitters into the National League, how that changes the Central a bit. That's all coming up on White Sox Weekly. It's ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Sox fans, if you're planning a special occasion and looking for the perfect location, we've got you covered. When you reserve your group outing for 2023, you get priority access to the biggest matchups and the best space for your group. For more information, visit whitesox.com/groups. Sox games, better with groups. Come out with everybody. It's a blast. Opening day not too far away. Spring training even closer than that. And White Sox players are beginning to speak to the media and kind of talk a little bit about what their off seasons have looked like. It's weird that they can, I don't know about you, but at the same time, it feels like it's January 21st, but it also feels like it's not. Like, I don't, and maybe this is just me. I had a kid. Well, my wife had a kid about 5 weeks ago. So time is just it's a malleable concept right now. I don't know. Charlie, I don't know what day it is. I only know whether there's White Sox Weekly today or not, and then that locates a Saturday for me, but I don't know. I don't know what day it is or what time of year it is. Have we seen the sun in the last, 6 weeks either? Is it just me?
I'm not sure. Well, that's the thing about Chicago, because didn't this literally happen a month ago where we
maybe
went 17 days without sunlight or something like that?
Maybe. It feels that way. It feels that way. I just don't, you know, you get out, you read MLB Trade, you know, get up in the morning, you have a cup of coffee, maybe you click on MLB Trade Rumors, maybe you go to FanGraphs, maybe Baseball Prospectus, maybe you're clicking the guys at Sox Machine, maybe you're, you know, headed over to the Twitter profiles of your favorite players or whatever, and you're doing your baseball checkup, and you look out in the glooming, it's gray, it's dark, it's cold, and you think, oh my God, why isn't baseball here yet? When will it possibly, when will it ever come? Soon. I promise you soon, even though it doesn't feel that way. Anyway, there's some sound that's come in lately, and Charlie, who you just heard from, chopped up some of this stuff. Dylan Cease made a little bit of news. He was on the rosters, or invited to the rosters, I guess is the particular way to say it, for both Team USA and Team Israel in the World Baseball Classic. He decided that's not for him this season and explained why earlier this week.
Yeah, I decided not to. I was looking forward to it, but it made more sense this go around to prepare for the season as opposed to pitch for it.
I know you haven't been in the game, you know, that long, but Has that changed a little bit? It seems like a lot of players are gravitating more towards that competition now. Where it started, it might have been a little tougher to get guys to compete in the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's definitely a huge honor and exciting anytime you get the opportunity to represent something bigger than yourself like that. I think it's a really big deal. I think a lot of it is just the unfortunate reality of having to weigh not what's more important, but essentially, you know, what I'm preparing for and it made more sense not to risk anything with it and to prepare for the season.
Yeah, I'm with Dylan on that. Remember, too, after his rookie season of 2019, where he threw 73 innings in the big leagues, 2020, which was, of course, the pandemic season that nobody liked, he made 12 starts and threw 58 and a third. In 2021, Cease led the White Sox in posts in 32 starts, 165 and two-thirds innings, more than double the combined inning total of his last two seasons, again, pandemic and his rookie season. Then, last year, finishing second in the Cy Young voting, 184 innings, 32 starts yet again. That's back-to-back seasons of 32 starts. And I know some of the older baseball fans that listen are going to go, well, listen, Benny McLean won 30 games in 68. So I don't know what the hell you're talking about. How hard can this be? We are in a different era, and that is a lot of innings to throw. And Dylan pitched them very, very well to the tune of a runner-up to Justin Verlander for the Cy Young. So I get that Cease kind of has, and I get he was being diplomatic a little bit, but eyes on the prize, and what matters to him is what gave him a pay bump and got him a lot of bonus money. Remember this year, players with less than 6 years service time were eligible in a couple of different ways for a pool of bonus money. This was put into the CBA. And Dylan, by virtue of finishing where he did in the Cy Young voting, I think brought down a cool $2 million there. Maybe it was a mildo, and then got the raise from about $700K to $5.7 million this year. So that is it's good work if you can get it. Now, Dylan also talked about his offseason kind of workout plans, his kind of strategy of an offseason changing a bit this year as opposed to years past. He is starting bullpens later this season and explained why.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is there's a lot less to work on. You know, the previous season I had a lot of things that needed to be ironed out, whereas now it's more, I think, rest and just making sure my body's ready and prepared for the long run is a little more important right now. So I'm able to kind of fine tune some of the little things as opposed to having to do like a whole lot of work up front.
Is that kind of the priority of getting deeper in the games or being able to be fresh through a long playoff run ideally?
Yeah, I think both of those. I haven't exactly seen the full spring training schedule or anything for me, but I think it'll be a little bit of a – there's less that needs to be done early. You know, it's more about getting kind of ready for that, you know, that beginning of the season and beyond stretch.
James Fegan of The Athletic with the follow-up question there, and it's a good one too. I think it's – in talking with Dylan a couple of times, he guessed it on White Sox Weekly late in the season last year, too. Actually, right before the All-Star break when everybody thought he was going to the All-Star team, and he should have. And then later on in the season as well. There is a – and it would be easy to think it's cockiness. It's absolutely not. It's confidence. It's surety. There is a level at which – where he feels in his delivery where some of that stuff, some of the mechanical stuff – is just, it's working. It's there now for him. Arm position, maybe even release point to a certain degree, footfall, stride length, some of those things he feels and has talked about a little bit are there. They're locked in. They're not work points anymore. And when you get to that point as a pitcher, that means you can kind of focus on some other things. And like Fegan was kind of teasing around there, James was, is that about getting deeper into ball games? Maybe not necessarily. But it could help. You might see that happen. Two things where Dylan Cease and Ethan Katz has talked about this a lot. We've talked about it a lot here on Weekly. They're really as good as Dylan was last year. There are two, and it's crazy to feel this. It's crazy to see this. But there are two clear areas where he can get even better And what does an even better Dylan Cease look like? He can last deeper into ball games. I think, generally speaking, there are some where you're not going to, you know, but that happens. He can get deeper into ball games, I think. And he can walk fewer hitters. Those things should be tied together. You walk fewer, you're hanging around more ball games. He walked the league-leading 78 last year, and that's probably as big a reason as any that he finished second in Cy Young voting to Justin Verlander by a good piece. 78's a lot of walks. So even cutting that in half, I mean, you cut it by a third, and that's a big, big difference in terms of base runners you got to work around, strikeouts you need, big ground balls you got to have, all those kinds of things. Couple from Dylan Cease. Oh, you know what? One more from Dylan Cease that I wanted to get here to. It's short. It doesn't give a lot away, but I think it's worth kind of a check-in sort of play here. Dylan was in his second year of arbitration this season. First year arbitration this season, and got the big raise, right? So here he talked about the potential broaching of any contract extension with the White Sox.
Yeah, I think, I'd always be open to something that's a fair, good deal. To my knowledge, there's nothing in the works in that regard, but, I love Chicago and I'd always be open to, you know, open to having a dialogue for sure.
Not a lot there. I hear you. And no alarm bells either that they haven't started talking, you know, extension. He is at 3 years of service time, ARB eligible up until 2026. That's his first eligibility at free agency. And Dylan is a guy, you know, obviously he wasn't drafted as a White Sox. Of course, he was in the Jose Quintana trade, a big piece that came over with Eloy Jimenez. But the White Sox have spent a lot in terms of development for Dylan Cease. And it has paid out in as good a way as you could possibly imagine for both player and for team. And those are the kind of guys that you want to sign to extensions if you can. He is also one of the best pitchers in baseball. And pitchers, if you haven't noticed over the last offseason, whoo boy, do they get paid. They get paid. So he'll be 30 at his free agent season or beginning his age 30 season, born in 95. So something to keep an eye on. You know, that's really all it is. Lucas Giolito spoke with MLB Network yesterday, Friday. I just talked about it. I don't know what day it is. It was 2 days ago. So whenever it was, whenever it is today, 2 days before then, and you'll hear from Lucas when we come back. It's White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. 1000.
You can stay up to date on all things White Sox by following the team's official social media accounts. Don't miss a minute of the action on and off the field. Follow the White Sox on social media today. They're just at White Sox, simply enough. Everywhere you can social media, even Twitter, as long as it's still around. Speaking of, we're on Twitter, at ESPN White Sox, where it's where you can get all the latest news and updates from us here at the White Sox Network. C1 McKnight is my own Twitter handle. I do some tweeting from time to time, a lot heavier in baseball season, you know, once we get there with the news and whatnot. I'll be down in spring training for a little while. We'll tweet some stuff from there and get you some news and grab some interviews and perhaps do a game or two. Looking forward to that. We are getting closer and closer. February 15th, just a couple of weeks away. Pitchers and catchers report for the White Sox. Now, we've been talking about a couple of different things, and it's kind of been a pitching-focused episode of White Sox Weekly today. That continues. Lucas Giolito was on the MLB Network and talking a bit about his offseason, about last year, a couple of different things. So we'll start here. It sounds like this offseason has been a pretty big change in focus for Lucas compared to last year. He talked a bit about his offseason work here.
Last season, I was really out of sync for most of the year. And so when I got home for the offseason, it was very important that, you know, we kind of identified like the issues where I was firing incorrectly in my delivery and got on a nice plyo ball program. Got a shout out Ryan Chapman Baseball Compound down in Irvine. Working out there has been absolutely wonderful. Really just kind of getting things back in sync, getting like the whole chain from ground up, firing everything at the right times, getting my rotation back with throwing. And it's been some really, really good work. I'm looking forward to the season.
There's a little video of Lucas working out at that Chapman baseball facility. I shouldn't say working out. He's throwing off a mound at that facility. And you can notice some difference in his mechanics, his kind of positioning, glove positioning, hand separation, lead leg, all that kind of stuff. Radio isn't the best medium for it, obviously. I don't want to talk you through a guy's mechanics. That probably bore you to death. It'd be difficult to do and kind of tough to locate. But suffice it to say, there's some changes for Lucas mechanically that will hopefully help him have a much better season in 23 than he did in 22. He was also asked whether the weight gain of last year's offseason is something he's sticking with. Here's Lucas.
Yeah, that was a bit of an experiment that might have gone wrong last offseason. I got really big. I felt really strong coming into spring, but my body just did not hold up great with all that extra weight. So this offseason, the focus in the gym and nutrition-wise, it's been all about getting lean, back to like a very comfortable weight for me, and all about explosiveness, strength, stability, mobility as well. For me, being a big guy, it's really important to be athletic so I can repeat my delivery. So that's been the main focus, and I'm back down to a good weight.
He was asked about his changeup, a nasty pitch for him in years past and something that he had to battle to find a bit in 22. Although the question is knocked out of this, but it was kind of posed to him like the changeup was a mystery to him all season. And it wasn't. I mean, there were starts where, oh, there it is. You know, there's that changeup from Lucas. First couple innings, it wasn't there, and then he'd find it, a bunch of strikeouts. Heck, there was a start, I think, against the Royals, just kind of pulling this from memory, but I think it's the Royals where he struck out like 7 of the first 11 hitters and a lot of them on changeups, and then it all kind of evaporated him in the fourth or the fifth, and he ended up getting chased from that game in a tie ball game. And that was kind of how the changeup was. Anyway, he was asked about that particular pitch.
Yeah. When my changeup's on, it's absolutely my best pitch. You know, I've had a lot of starts in my career where it was fastball changeup only because the changeup was working. And last season, getting out of sync, I started to kind of push it a little bit more. It wasn't getting that good action I wanted, so we started to more heavily rely on the slider. But then towards the end of the year, I started getting that feel back and started getting that good horizontal movement, good sink on it. And right now in my throwing program, that's kind of where it's at. So I'm looking forward to the changeup being back right where it needs to be.
Lastly, from Lucas, he was asked about new White Sox manager Pedro Grifol.
Yeah, they've been fantastic. I think Pedro is going to be absolutely wonderful for us. I don't want to give too much away, but I had a very, very nice long conversation with him right after he got hired. He said all the right things for us. It's really about getting our team together, getting us all on the same page, knowing what the goal is, and then working towards that goal every single day, kind of doing a really good job of building unity in our clubhouse and going from there. And I think that based on what Pedro was telling me, that's what he's all about. And so I'm looking forward to, kind of building that relationship once we get out to Arizona.
Very similar refrain from Lucas there about Pedro. We kind of heard something similar from Dylan last week and from a lot of different players, Andrew Benintendi included, when we had him last week, Dylan a couple weeks ago, talking about new White Sox manager, Pedro Grifol. So two more things here before we wrap up the show and get out of here for the week. Eloy Jimenez was named the 10th best left fielder in Major League Baseball by MLB Network. They do their top 10 right now in each and every position. Mentioned Liam Hendricks was seventh on the reliever list, and Eloy Jimenez was 10 in left field. I know that that's caused quite a bit of stir in and around White Sox Twitter and White Sox fans. It had been they signed Andrew Benintendi. He's your left fielder. Your general manager, your manager, and your left fielder, Andrew Benintendi, all talked about Eloy Jimenez being primarily a designated hitter in the coming season. And here at MLB Network, has him in left field. I get it. Nobody likes to be short-sighted. Nobody likes to be looked over. But still, I think this. Eloy Jimenez was one of the three best hitters in the American League in the second half when he came back from injury. Two things there. One, I know it's familiar to have Eloy return from injury. You want him to be healthy. And if you can grab 140 games from Jimenez, hopefully being the DH helps you do that, you've got quite an offensive source there. The other is it's a tip of the cap. I mean, if you've got, I don't know, let's just say this is maybe how it happened. A producer working hard, just shifted over to the top 10 right now beat, has to go ahead and put together a list. And that list makes it on air before, I don't know, Brian Kenny can vet it or something like that. And you got Jimenez at 10th because his stats fit that bracket, but he doesn't really figure to play a lot of left field. They're worst situations. They really are. He's a heck of a bat, and that should be good. Now, speaking of big bats, or at least impactful ones, the Twins and Marlins made a deal middle of the afternoon yesterday. Luis Arraez, the man who broke up Dylan Cease's no-hit bid last year. Luis Arraez is no longer a pesky Twin. He's going to be a Marlin, a fish. The trade was made, and Pablo Lopez, a starter, goes to the Twins. Two prospects as well. I think the Twins are clear winners in this trade. And that's I'm not taking shots at Arraez. He's a dangerous hitter and a guy you absolutely have to worry about. But we talk quite a bit in this day and age about what batting average alone can do for you. Arraez is not a power threat by any stretch. And he is defensively a little bit limited. Now, the Twins made an interesting decision here in getting rid of Arraez and trusting some of the young, you know, kind of up and coming infielders that they're going to have to rely on. But they absolutely bolstered the rotation some. And the Cliff Notes version of this trade is that with the signing of Carlos Correa and now better depth in the rotation, Twins, White Sox, and Guardians all figure to be a three-team race for the Central in 2023. We'll cover exactly that next week on White Sox Weekly. That's going to do it for us. Big thanks to Charlie Bevins, our producer. Happy birthday to Len Casper. We'll talk to you next week right here on ESPN 1000.